Welcome to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast, where we explore the fundamental abilities and insights that make us better humans. Here's your host, Christina Eanes.
Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Christina Eanes. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Essential Skills for Humaning. We have Wendy Willis with us to talk about actionable empathy. Welcome, Wendy.
Good morning, Christina. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, I am excited to dive into the topic. But before we do, can you share a little bit about your background, whatever you want our audience to know?
Yeah, thanks, Christina. I have a kind of checkered past. I'm both a JD, so I was a practicing lawyer, and I have an MFA in poetry. There was actually a guy at West Virginia University at the law school there who tried to identify every lawyer poet in the United States. And so there actually are a few. I'm one of those few. And now I run a community engagement, statewide community engagement program here at Portland State University that mostly serves the state of Oregon, although we do some work beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Wow. I've never had a poet attorney on before.
God, I'm glad to be the first.
There we go. So now before we dive too deep into our topic, let's start by defining first empathy.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's all kinds of ways people, you know, it can be defined as an ethical stance. It can be defined philosophically, but I think for the purposes of, you know, this conversation, I think just thinking about how do you understand other people's points of view and, you know, their positions in the world and what their needs are and where they're coming from.
Yeah. Well, I love that you define it that way, because I think a lot of people misconstrue empathy as I have to feel what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's
that's
more of
some
a,
of it, right?
Like, it's some of that, it, right? Yeah. But there's the cognitive understanding of a different perspective as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then what happens when we add the actionable in front of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an interesting question because from my, you know, how I, you know, what I did spend my days and nights thinking about is how do we have a shared enterprise in public life? Like, I think actionable empathy can be in your family, in your workplace, you know? So I think there's lots of ways in which you say, trying to understand folks' perspective, can matter in whatever you do. I think one of the things about public life that where it's important becomes important is there's a way in which we start to think about how we create a community together. It's kind of just aggregation. Like, we just aggregate all of our own opinions and then it adds up to something. So it's a mathematical equation, which really has some serious downsides, because then it just becomes about power, right? Who has the most power from their perspective to win. And I think the thing about thinking about empathy in that context is to say to yourself, it takes you a step closer to thinking about what the common good is, so as you consider not just your perspective, but you start to to internalize other people's perspective as you act out in the world.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So, and that's particularly important the year that this episode is coming out with all of the like elections and stuff. So, you know, we've got people on opposite sides.
Yeah.
So what are some of the, maybe those first steps to expanding one's perspective into that actionable empathy?
Yeah. I think voting is a very, you know, it's a very limited way of thinking of oneself as a citizen. Mm-hmm. And when I say citizen, I don't mean legal status. I mean thinking about oneself as living in community, right? Like, how do I live with others? How do I consider the interests of others? And because voting is aggregated, right? So it really is a way in which you say, it's me, it's my single act, it's private, it's supposed to be secret. And all of that is really just an individualistic act. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways in which we can participate with those, with others, and kind of recognize our interdependence. And in that space, there's just a lot more room to both consider other people's perspectives and to sort of have an imagination for other possibilities rather than sort of zero sum issue with politics. I mean, even the way you framed it just now, which is totally appropriate because that's how it's framed for all of us, is like one side or the other.
Yeah.
And there's
so, what it feels
and
like.
It does feel like that, right? Like when you think about voting, especially if you're in DC, as you are.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're acting out in community, when you're trying to design the way you want to live together, there's so many more possibilities. And, yes. and you really don't have the opportunity to just say it's got to be my way. So imagining yourself into other people's lives is just part of what you have to do to reach some kind of, you know, shared space.
Yeah. So one step I'm hearing is to imagine more possibilities.
Yeah.
You don't either feel this way or this way, right? There's a spectrum. There's, I mean, how do you, so it's tough thinking about, you know, when we've grown up with a certain perspective or developed a certain perspective over time, confirmation bias, right? We do everything that we can to support that belief and refute things that negate that belief.
Yeah.
What are some ways to really open up to those possibilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think first of all, I would say I think most people have many more questions than they let on, right? Mm-hmm. And that their positions are less fixed than they seem like they are from a poll or from television. Like we see this level of certainty demonstrated for us, and we think, okay, that's how we're supposed to behave when we're in public life, when in fact, I think most people have a more nuanced view. And so to some extent, it's giving people permission to speak the things that they already know.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak their uncertainties. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of places where that's, you know, either looked at negatively or looked at as weak or just not demonstrated for us. So I think in some hand, like, so in some ways, just saying to ourselves, we don't have to be certain about everything because we're not, like we really aren't.
Yeah.
And there are a few places I think that people have very strong, you know, moral feelings about things and they have black and white thinking, but it's not that many. Mm-hmm. And many, many, many of the decisions that we have to make are balancing decisions and trade-off decisions. And you're like, I think this is the right trade-off, but I'm not sure. Right.
Yeah.
And so if we could normalize that kind of thinking out loud, I think that would go a long ways toward and opening up the possibilities. And there are many other ways. Like I'm sure, I know you've talked about listening before, like, you know, listening to others. And I think literature and art are really important in this conversation because it's a way in which the internal life of others is visible to us without having to, you know, make real people. Sorry, my lights went off in my office because we have, if I sit still for too long, they go off. So I think it's, you know, it's a way in which we can see that inner life. Mm-hmm. Without sort of making people, you know, either relive their trauma or educate us on things that are really our business to educate ourselves on. So I think thinking about places where we can, just enrich our knowledge of others is it's both pleasurable for one thing. And it also, you know, just opens the doors and windows to what other people's experiences are.
Yeah, I like that. So using literature, books, documentaries, even films.
Yeah. And
to
visual
learn
art.
Something. Yeah, yeah. Visual art and choosing stories of people who aren't like us.
Yeah.
I think would be very important.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So now, I'm trying to think of, so what about in those situations where we do feel, well, first of all, normalizing. I love that, you know, normalizing the, because I remember being called like wishy-washy for not having a firm opinion in certain areas. So normalizing being open in certain areas. Now, what about those times what are your recommendations for those times when we do feel extremely strong in a certain area mm-hmm. and we're trying to collaborate, live with, et cetera, someone who feels extremely strong in a totally different area?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think people have different ideas about this, like whether they can, I mean, hardly ever are we asked to actually collaborate with somebody on that subject matter, right? Like mm-hmm. these issues are kind of meta issues. And so, you know, the idea that someone who has a, you know, a super strong moral opinion on the death penalty, say, mm-hmm. like, when am I honestly going to be dealing with that person on the death penalty? Not very often, right? And so, mm-hmm. so how do you, you know, how do you recognize a whole person? I know that you were in law enforcement and I was a criminal defense lawyer, for 10 years. And, you know, what you say in that world is people aren't the sum of their worst act. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a way to look at folks to like, even though I think this issue is, you know, sort of black and white and I'm on one side and they're on the other side. What's the complexity of their humanity and entering the relationship and the conversation from that complexity? And, you know, I know that there are times when people's safety is threatened by being in relationship with folks who, mm-hmm. who maybe, you know, have really, sort of dangerous views to them personally. But that is, we always run to that example, but that's such mm-hmm. a narrow example. And yeah. it's a really important one. And I think we should recognize it as real. Like it is very mm-hmm. real that some people's safety is threatened by relationship with others, but there is a huge range of other spaces in which that, that there is openness to be able to hear, understand, you know, seek, be curious, that is not dangerous. And so using the most extreme example, like kind of freezes us, to these not other examples that aren't as extreme.
Yeah. 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 No, I was thinking about like the typical, like ones that I've recently seen, individuals working on the same team. One is, devout in their Jewish religion. The other one, it was supporting, you know, liberation of Palestine.
Yeah.
Or you know, someone with very strong, like Christian beliefs, mm-hmm. you know, in certain area and someone just, you know, trying to live their truth in a trans way or whatever.
Yeah.
So those, we've seen those on teams, right? So what is the best way to, well, I mean, I'm hearing, showing up curious.
Yeah.
Right. Listening.
Yeah.
Giving them space to be who they are and you're getting space to be who you are, essentially. What else?
I mean, I think imagination is really important, right? Like mm-hmm. just thinking about possibility, like both imagining yourself into other people's circumstances rather than just shutting down and putting up the fences, right? Like,
yes.
Like to like have enough regulation of your nervous system and whatever that takes, either in the moment or in a different moment where to imagine, you know, what that person's life might be and not mm-hmm. just their external life, right? But people's interior lives and their emotional lives are so drive so much about how people behave in the world. And so trying to think about that and imagine that. And then the interests, the intersecting interests become really complex because people's mm-hmm. identities are complex. And so you start to think, oh, here's some places of overlap that seem, that on the surface didn't appear.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a, you know, it's a really, it can be very like strange and beautiful to connect with people in that way.
Yeah. Well, I like to think, hey, we're both human.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we at least have that connection and then we can build off of that.
Yeah. And we've become so, you know, we're very good at sort of rhetorical speech in public because that's what mm-hmm. that's what's modeled. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes like we're just proclaiming things and you know, what are the other ways of, you know, speaking and listening that aren't that?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. What else do you want to talk about with this topic?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of, I think there's lots of ways you can go, but one of the things that I think our sort of our nervous systems and our brains and our bodies are just so overwhelmed with information in some ways. Yeah. It makes it really hard to be, slow enough to, imagine for your imagination to work. And so, you know, one of the things I think about is solitude and quiet and, you know, being, more conscious about what can, when the information that one consumes, both because it can be poisonous, right? Like some of it's just like bad for you. It's like eating Fritos all day, but, but some of it is also just the quantity itself. Yeah. Of that information, sort of swamps our system and makes us reactive. And I think that so I just am like in myself and in my kids and, you know, in the work I do, just think, how do we like slow this down and quiet this enough to make this kind of empathetic response even possible in your brain and your body and your system? Yeah. And I don't, and I think we all have to, you know ourselves well enough to be able to do that and to recognize it, right? Like to recognize that spark of curiosity about someone and follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes time and sometimes it takes multiple, you know, you have to be, it takes, you know, motivation. It's messy. There's a kind of, attractiveness to the tidiness of the two-party system. Like, oh, I guess just get to pick a team and then just ride that horse all the way. Never have to get off of it. Where if there's a way in which, you know, confusion and exploration is part of the expectation, that is frustrating sometimes and it has dead ends in it. And, but it's like massively rewarding and kind of human, as you say, like it feels real. In a way that some of these other experiences that we have in the political sphere and in public life, we know they're fake, but they're but they're easy. So we just say, okay, well, somebody else is taking care of how to think about this, so I'm just gonna. That's one thing off my list.
Yeah. Oh, I love the. I almost want to call it like mental hygiene. Being very careful about what you allow in, and that there's so many different things that could come from that, right? Like, if you're whatever social media you consume, you know, making sure I know during at least like election years or big things, I will shut off certain streams so that I don't have to see that stuff coming through, you know, or, only when you're if you check the news, only search for certain, I don't know, certain things, because it's amazing what's out there that and how it can impact us.
Yeah.
From keeping an open mind and not being anxious and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And you start to think, like, I am very guilty of this. Like, when I take any of those, you know, strengths tests, they're always about input. Like, I'm the input queen. So I have, so I am not suggesting that anybody else is better. I'm better than anyone else in this, but it's also that you start to think you're doing something by consuming, right? Because this consumer model of participation is the one that's modeled for us. So you're like, oh, I'm participating by watching the news. And it's like, or, you know, watching Twitter or X or whatever we call it now. Like, that isn't, and we start to think, oh, that's something. And it's like, really all it is consumption. And it makes us feel bad on top of it. And it freezes us in this way of being that everyone's dissatisfied with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I have seen, I can't remember. There's a couple of services at least that you can sign up for that send you neutral, well-balanced, news feeds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure if we just Googled it, but I think that would also help with the confirmation bias. So, because if we cut everything off and then I have input in my top 10 as well.
I bet you do.
And then we go try to curate stuff.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that that confirmation bias isn't coming in where we're only looking for stuff that supports our beliefs. So anytime we can get a hold of the access of that neutral, coming from a curious place information, I think would be amazing.
Well, and the other, I mean, one of the things that I've discovered about news is we actually take the Times, the New York Times, even though I live in Portland. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about having the physical newspaper in my house is mm-hmm. I have a little ritual. Like I do all my things. I feed my sourdough starter and I water my plants and all that. And then uh-huh. I stand at the counter and drink my coffee and flip through the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And it's a way in which, like, I often, like, I get stuck in the arts section because I look at all these shows that I'll never be able to go to because I live thousands and thousands of miles from New York City. But I see things that pique my curiosity that I do mm-hmm. not see if it's all being pushed at me and curated for me. And I'm like, oh, you see a story about, I saw the story about a Bronze Age, domestic, archaeological dig that they just mm-hmm. did in the UK. And I just got super interested in that. I'm like, wow. Yeah. And all the objects that people lived with, right? And that's, mm-hmm. permitted me to imagine myself into another society. Mm-hmm. And that practice is the same practice I can use on the street of Portland so I think that kind of encounter, which we all used to have in, physical news, is really different than the algorithms that are being pushed at us. Even the good ones, even the ones that are like, we've said, this is what we're interested in, because we don't always know what we're interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, what was I going to say about that? Oh, there was something there. I lost it. Oh, yes. So I love how we can creatively train our brains for empathy. Yeah. And it is trainable.
Yeah, totally.
Right? And it's translatable into, like, your example of getting curious about the Bronze Age. You can translate that into getting curious about the way another group of individuals live or work or whatever. So
yeah,
it's completely trainable. I love that.
Well, and I think your questions about actionability then are like, then what do you do with that? Right. I mean,
yeah,
you continue to maintain that. And some of it is, it'll lead you, right? If you're, mm-hmm. that curiosity will lead you to action if you feed it and it's because the kind of satisfaction of that kind of curiosity is super fun, right? So your pleasure centers are all lit up by it. So I think in some ways, one thing will lead to another if you do create the conditions for your brain and your body and your imagination and your heart and all of that to respond to the things that are interesting to you. Yeah. But when you think about action, there are so many places that you can participate in the life of your neighbor that does not involve mm-hmm. voting. You should vote. I'm not advocating against voting. We all should do it. And it's really important. But I also think there's so many ways in which we're sort of called to live together, and that mm-hmm. that is such a complex space. And it, we're having a loneliness epidemic, and mm-hmm. and people feel like they don't have agency in their own lives, and they're searching for meaning and purpose, and like stepping out of your home and being part of something that you're building with others, even people who you may or may not have chosen, as my mom always says, chosen to invite to Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. But you, so they might, you might not want them as your best friend, but acting with them as your neighbor, is a really, can be really enriching on so many levels. Like it accomplishes something. Your park is cleaner, the trees are planted, whatever. But it also then, creates a space in which you learn something about somebody else's life and somebody else's needs. And it's cross-generational and it's interracial and all those things that all those divisions that we, when we stay in our homes and engage with each other digitally, it's much harder to break out of those sort of, silos.
Yeah. So get out there and talk to people.
Talk to them.
Join different groups.
Yeah. Plant a tree with them.
Yes.
Whatever, talk about, there's a whole new form of government that's happening in Portland next year. Mm-hmm. We had a huge shift in how it's going to work. And so this is a chance to create a collective political culture that we've never had before. So it just feels super, rich and promising.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Well, now, speaking of which, before we get to your final piece of advice, I can't believe how time has flown. Can you share a little bit of, more about any products or services you want our audience to know about?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, of course, I'd love to talk to people. So if people want to talk about this more, I'm happy to do it. So, I mean, just contact me and I could point you somewhere. But I actually think, you know, I run a program called Oregon's Kitchen Table in Oregon, which has plenty of opportunities to participate in your community. But I think, you know, every community has that. Even like DC, I know, is a weird place, right? Because it has a kind of, the federalization of the community is strange. And, but even beneath that, there's places that, are like, you know, super, promising place to participate with your neighbor. So explore those things, right? And follow your curiosities. If your interest is gardens, like look at your community gardens. If you're, you know, if your interests are local politics, there's lots of places to participate in local politics. So I just would encourage people to like bring their mammalian self out to like go out and be a mammal with others and just get a sense of what it's like to work with people. Remind yourself about what it's like to work with people when you're not getting paid for it. You're trying to, it's a shared enterprise that you want to achieve and you have different ways of thinking about it, and just enjoy the pleasure of and frustration and like beautiful messiness of trying to do that.
I love it. That's great advice. Yeah. Now back to contacting you. What is maybe a website or LinkedIn? Yeah. What's the best way for
probably
folks?
Our program's called Oregon's Kitchen Table. So I'm at oregonskitchentable.org and I'm at Portland State University. So you can find me either place. And, I would love to like connect folks to all the, I know hundreds or thousands of people around the country who are doing this kind of work. So I'd be happy to connect you in your own community and happy to talk about ideas that people have to, you know, be in community and communion with others.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Oh, thank you, Wendy, so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun to be with you.
Okay.
Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast. We hope you've gained valuable insights to enhance your journey as a human being. Remember, practice makes progress. Keep honing those essential skills. And until next time, keep being the best version of yourself. For more resources, visit eanstraining.com.